Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Robbie Stanley, Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic here with you. We'll get ahead a look ahead to Preds and Avalanche coming up in Game 2 around 8:30. Preds pick to click later this hour as well. A very important edition of Preds pick to click. Joe Rex Road's going to put a lot of pressure on Chase McCabe.
All the pressure.
We'll see how he responds to that. Right now, talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Sean texting in says, this draft class is solid as heck. Okonkwo is an underrated pick. I believe NPF will be more of a project than people think /want. So speaking of that, we've talked a lot about, obviously, the A.J. Brown trade and the Tannehill comments in the aftermath, but there was a draft last week that the Titans participated in, and Treylon Burks, the first-round pick, Roger McCreary in the second round, a cornerback out of Auburn, Nicholas Petit-Frere out of Ohio State as an offensive tackle in the third round, and obviously Malik Willis generating some headlines as well. So the Titans creating more picks with the A.J. Brown trade, going from originally being scheduled to pick at number 26 overall and then not again until number 90. You turn into 18, and then you pick again at 35, and then you pick again at 69, and then at 86 as well with Malik Willis in there. So multiplying the picks that you have in the top 90, what did you think, Chase McCabe, of the job that J-Rob and the Titans did with their draft picks? And was there anything other than the obvious of the A.J. Brown trade and the drafting of Malik Willis that really surprised you?
Yeah, overall, and I know reading through a lot of draft grades and – I know those don't matter, really, at the end of the day. It's all about how the players perform. Overall, I thought this was one of John's best drafts since he's been here. Now, it's got to play out. You know, we got to see these guys on the field. But on paper, I really, really like it because you address needs that you had. You made the best out of a tough situation with the A.J. Brown stuff by getting Treylon Burks to be his replacement. You added another receiver in Kyle Phillips. That I think is going to be underrated. Excuse me, I thought I was going to sneeze there for a second.
That'd be awesome.
I know. Brick a chair just like Rex wrote. So I think that's underrated. My favorite pick, though, of the entire draft was probably Hassan Haskins in the fourth round. I think that is a solid pick for this Titans team, and I don't say that in them asking him to come in and replace Derrick Henry. He could eventually, you know, whenever that day comes. But I think he's a good complimentary piece because, you know, you needed help at the running back position. There are unknowns with Henry in the foot and how he's going to be. But, you know, he can add another element. And he's kind of built like Henry. He's the same kind of running back. So he's not that change of pace back that they've drafted, you know, the last couple years and hadn't worked out. He can be very similar to Derrick Henry. So I really, really like that pick, but I like the Theo Jackson pick in the sixth round as well. Versatile defensive back. So overall, I like this draft class. I can't wait for I don't think I've been this excited about a preseason game for the Titans than I have in a while. But, you know, a lot of that has to do with being able to see Malik Willis.
It's interesting. I agree with mostly everything that you said there. I'm excited about the draft class. I mean, Chig Okonkwo at tight end, I think, has a chance to be really good. I mean, physically, you know, Tannehill pointed this out the other day. He certainly looks the part, and he is a versatile, athletic guy at the tight end position. One thing that's interesting to me, that as you kind of sort through here, I mean, you take the offensive tackle in the third round with Nicholas Petit-Frere, and you don't go guard. You don't go interior lineman in this draft. And we were talking about, I mean, all the mock drafts heading into the draft obviously had the Titans taken. A lot of them had Zion Johnson. Some of them had Kenyon Green. And those two guys ended up going before 26 anyway, where they were originally scheduled to pick. But you don't address it at all in the draft. And it kind of leaves me looking around and saying, well, all right, well, who's going to be the left guard this year? You've got Aaron Brewer in there. You signed Jamarco Jones this offseason as well from Seattle. And you've got Dylan Raidens. I mean, you just drafted another relatively high pick at offensive tackle. So do they now view Dylan Raidens as a guard? Is he competing for the starting job at right tackle? I'm interested. That was probably the most intriguing thing outside of the picks themselves in the draft. the most intriguing thing to me was not going interior lineman in the draft at any point.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that too. So I don't know. I don't know whether to read into they have more faith in Dylan Raidens than maybe we do, that they've seen improvement with him and think that that he's ready for that. You mentioned Aaron Brewer. Now, an interesting scenario that I haven't really heard anybody throw out there that maybe they could look at in training camp is, do you put Aaron Brewer at center and move Ben Jones over to left guard? You know, Jones has played guard before. We've seen that shift happen. So is that something that maybe they experiment with to see what happens there? You know, with Petit Frere, I don't know if he's ready to be a day one starter at right tackle, which concerns me a little bit. Does that mean, okay, they're going to put Raidens there, or, you know, Dennis Kelly's still out there? I think they should definitely look at that. They didn't bring back Quisenberry. He's gone now with Buffalo. So do they sign somebody else? But the offensive line is still going to be a concern for me until I actually see whatever they roll out there work, because I don't think they've completely addressed that. So I'm with you. I'm surprised they didn't go with an interior offensive lineman. But you also look at when they actually made their selections, that maybe what they thought was good wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so they went with best available, which I think sometimes that's what you need to do. You don't always need to draft for need. Sometimes you just have to take the best player available.
Well, and I think that, you know, to that point, is that what they did at 35 overall when they drafted McCreary? I mean, obviously, I mean, you're looking at cornerback right now, and I would assume that Caleb Farley going to get a pretty good look this year coming off of injury. You know, Vrabel was very complimentary of him, kind of went out of his way to be complimentary of him in the pre-draft press conference.
And always pay attention when Vrabel does that.
Yeah, which he does not. I mean, he doesn't just offer that up all the time. Yep. And he's done that for a few guys. I remember he did it with Hilliard last year. He's done it with Nick Westbrook-Akina, and he did it with Farley, you know, last week as well. So, you know, it could be just as simple as McCreary was the best guy available on their board, and that's where they decided to go at number 35 overall. I will say, I mean, if it works out and Farley works out, you've got four guys on a rotational basis right now that you feel pretty darn good about. And to me, the one area of the defense that I was concerned about was Caleb Farley. Like, what happens if he comes back and he's not ready to be a starter? What happens if he comes back and he's injured, which, by the way, he's been injured a lot lately? You know, that's something you have to address if you're the Titans. So I know a lot of people were left kind of scratching their heads when they took Roger McCreary at number 35 overall, and I was too. But the more you think about it, the more I think you can kind of maybe understand what John Robinson and the Titans were thinking there.
Yeah, I think that's a pick that just is win-win. You know, if everything works out like you hope it does, and Farley's good and Fulton's good, you know, they're healthy, and ready to go, then you just, like you said, you have four solid cornerbacks, and then you have some depth behind them, you know, with Jackson and Buster Screen. I mean, they got six viable options at that point for the cornerback position for this team, and I could see them carrying six cornerbacks or maybe more, you know, for this team this year. So I think that's just, you know, gravy at this point. So overall, I like the draft class. I still think, even though they are strapped for cap room, that they could still potentially add via free agency. I think they could use one more wide receiver. I'd really like them to look at Cole Beasley as a slot receiver. I think you get him on the cheap. You know, I've heard Will Fuller's name thrown out there. He's hurt all the time. I really wouldn't look at that. But and then like we said earlier, another offensive lineman. But overall, I think this is going to be a good draft class. And I really hope that it all pans out because, like I said, on paper, I like it a lot.
How do you feel about the Titans draft class and the work that John Robinson and the Titans did last week, navigating through the draft, adding more picks in the top 90, everything on the table on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. We'll get to more of that next. The Nashville Predators in the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs, and we need you at Bridgestone Arena. Big game tonight in Game 2 in Colorado. We'll see if the Predators can even up the series as they come back home, setting up what would be an awesome environment at Game 3 coming up on Saturday at Bridgestone Arena. Round one playoff tickets are on sale now at NashvillePredators.com/tickets. These are the games that you don't want to miss. Epic goals, massive wins, and historic moments. I can tell you, if you've never been to a playoff game before, that's something you're definitely going to want to check out. Visit NashvillePredators.com/tickets to be there for all the action. Stand with us, Smashville, and paint the town Preds. Once again, that's NashvillePredators.com/tickets. Join 102.5 The Game and the Preds Energy Team tonight to root on the Preds at Headquarters Beercade downtown for the Preds Bud Light Watch Party and enter to win tickets to the Round 1 Game 3 game coming up on Saturday at Bridgestone Arena. I think Tennessee Oilers song is in Michelle's head.
Apparently.
It's a great song.
Double shot.
Shout out to Ronnie Dunn.
I'm almost in vacay mode and I'm just vibing right now.
So who isn't vibing?
When I was... I guess I was in like 7th or 8th grade. Ronnie Dunn's daughter, I think, went to FRA. And we had, at the end of the year, we, you know, always did fun things. And I remember walking by the theater in the middle school, and we heard like this rock music, and I heard My Maria.
Oh, yeah.
And I like looked in there, Ronnie Dunn's doing a concert for the high school, like a free concert. I'm like, well, I want to go to that.
Just nailed it. It's good stuff. Taking your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Matt from Camden texting in says, I like the draft top to bottom. I agree with Chase. I'd kick the tires on Kelly and Beasley because I think you can get them cheap on 1 or 2 year deals, and I'd stick Radins at guard. But I also could see them being hard-headed and putting Radins at tackle and Brewer at guard. This coming from Matt from Camden on the text line. It is interesting. Like we talked about, you know, maybe where they go in the draft tells you how they view Dylan Radins. Now that they've gone not having interior guard, a lot of Titans fans are saying, well, does that mean that they view Radins as a guard? I don't know that I necessarily buy it that way. Maybe he is the favorite for the starting right tackle job, and you know, Petit Frere will eventually compete there. But I don't really feel like I'm that much closer to knowing how they view Dylan Radins now as I was before the draft, and that kind of concerns me.
Yeah, no, I have no idea. You know, maybe we'll learn a little bit more when you get into mini camps and stuff like that, but probably not. I just think
Drew Brady will be an open book about that stuff. You know, guys,
you know, he usually is. Yeah. Like, guys, I'm going to change my ways this year. I'm gonna give you more information.
Yeah.
So let you know what's going on.
Joe's convinced that Vrabel dies a little bit inside every time he's forced to come out with an injury report. He's just like, oh, my God. Okay. I'll let these idiots in the media know.
Probably not. when's he coming on again?
Is he working on it?
Is he making an appearance?
We're working on it.
It was like my first month working, and I remember being like, hi, and all happy. I was like, are you ready to go on with the guys? Are you excited? He's like, oh, yeah, I'm just so static right now.
Just thrilled.
Oh, I love
Vrabel's the type that, like, you know, obviously I don't go to the press conferences and practices and stuff because until recently I was working during that time. Correct. I mean, I'm still working during that time, but I was on the air. But I feel like every time I'm around him, it's like, does he know who I am? He probably knows who I am.
Yeah.
Does he hate me? Yeah, he probably
does. Yeah, well, I
guess. That's how it is.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jack from Nashville, who wants to weigh in. Jack, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
What's going on?
Well, I was just going to ask, if we didn't take Malik where we took him, how differently would you feel about this draft? Because I feel like that was the most important thing, getting him that late so we don't have to pay him that much. It's really a risk-free situation. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Hey, thanks for the call,
Jack. That's an interesting question. I would probably still feel the same because, you know, assuming that the other pieces, you know, stay the same around Malik Willis, you know, maybe that's where maybe that pick could have been the interior offensive lineman. But, you know, I think at that point when you got there and they did move up a few spots to go ahead and grab him, but it's like he's still sitting there. And you knew, you know, if you're John Robinson, I think you went into this draft that quarterback was a need, but it wasn't a dire need. And so I think you looked at it as, okay, what he just said, we can get this guy. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, it's a late third round pick. So it's not the end of the world. So it was kind of a, you know, low risk, high reward kind of pick. But I would have felt the same. I don't think Malik Willis was what really changed this draft. I think it was just overall, I really liked the selections that they made.
I think the value part of it starts to become intriguing. I mean, the quarterbacks, they slid in this draft, and I wasn't convinced that they would. You know, obviously, I mean, all the talk about the quarterbacks in the draft was this quarterback class is not strong. Some people thought the quarterback class was horrible, which I think is reflected in where they were drafted. But by the time you get down to the third round and you're looking around and, you know, Malik Willis, I have no clue where he was on the Titans draft board, but nobody really thought he'd slide to a third round. I mean, the value-wise, that can end up being a great pick for you at some point. Now, David Beauclair brought up, I think, a really interesting point in terms of how you view Malik Willis moving forward. I think mostly everybody would agree he's probably not going to see the field this year other than the preseason. And, you know, in case Ryan Tannehill gets hurt, maybe he sees it then. But other than that, he's probably going to be, you know, redshirted, for lack of a better term, this year. But what about after that? Like, is he good enough? Can he show enough to the coaching staff this year to be ready in 2023? Because, you know, obviously, if you read about Malik Willis, if you hear the experts talk about Malik Willis, he's got the arm strength. He's got the athleticism. Everything else really needs some work. It's the processing defenses. It's making the right throws accurately, reading defenses. You know, all the things that go with playing the position of quarterback at the NFL level, it's going to take some work. So can he make enough progress in that this year where you feel good about him being the quarterback? Because as Beauclair brought up, if it's a two-year thing with him, then you've really got 2 years to evaluate what you see, because there is no fifth-year option since he wasn't taken in the first round. That's an interesting part of this.
Yeah. Now, I want to go back to something you just said, that he's likely not to see the field. And for the most part, I agree with you. But I think we've also seen this trend in the NFL where there are packages developed for the backup quarterback, specifically the young backup quarterback.
San Francisco last year with Trey Lance.
San Francisco had it with Trey Lance. Different circumstance, but, you know, the Raiders did that with Mariota. There were some packages that were developed for him. We've obviously seen Taysom Hill over the last few years, and that kind of started the trend with the backup quarterback. So I do wonder if Tim Kelly and Todd Downing developed some packages specifically made for Malik Willis. Now, I think if they do that, and that means they're likely carrying Logan Woodside too and carrying three quarterbacks, because I think the people that say that, oh, Woodside is gone, I'm not so convinced yet that I could see them actually carry three quarterbacks, especially if they do have some packages for Malik Willis. So that's something to pay attention to. But to your point, he's not going to see the field from a starting, you know, point of view unless something really bad happens. And I think even then that, you know, if Woodside is on the team, they might give him a shot first just to see what they have. But I think it's certainly going to be curious of how they develop him. But, you know, you also make a great point in that he doesn't have the fifth-year option. So time is going to be of the essence to see exactly what you have in the third-round pick.
And then, you know, we've gone through the depth of this draft for the Titans, but then there's Treylon Burks sitting there with their first-round pick at number 18 overall. There's pressure anyway on a first-round pick coming in, regardless of what position it is, to be ready and to play and to help you. And there was going to be pressure on the first-round pick this year because of the way the last 2 years have gone with Isaiah Wilson and Caleb Farley. And now you multiply the A.J. Brown trade as well. Treylon Burks has a lot of pressure to come in and be really good immediately. And that may not be fair, but that's going to be what it is. And we'll see if Treylon Burks can respond to that coming in to training camp.
Yeah. What do you think had more pressure? Treylon Burks now with everything you just mentioned, or Corey Davis is the fifth overall pick? Or is it equal?
I think it's very similar. But I would say I would probably give the edge to Burks just because it's a known commodity of what you're replacing.
Yeah.
And maybe the pressure's not squarely on Burks. The pressure's on J-Rob too, because you got rid of A.J. Brown. And he's a known commodity in the NFL in terms of his ability. Now, you know, is there room for growth in A.J. Brown's game statistics-wise? Yeah, I'd say so, and he better have it now with, you know, the contract that he just signed. But I think there's more pressure on the situation as a whole because you know who A.J. Brown is and how important he is, and Treylon Burks has a lot to live up to from that perspective. Now, the good news is I love Treylon Burks.
I do too.
Was my pick that I hope the Titans had before they traded A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
And now that they have, we'll see if he can live up to that.
I think they could have gotten him potentially at 26. So, you know, that certainly could have been something. I think there would be less pressure on him if Robert Woods wasn't coming off a torn ACL.
Yes.
If Robert Woods wasn't coming off a torn ACL, then there's not pressure because, okay, Woods is the number one receiver. And you're going that way. But the fact that he is coming off a torn ACL, that is going to factor in because you don't know what productivity you're going to get out of him. And therefore, a lot's going to be on Treylon Burks. Now, one texter on the text line, Caleb, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, said, we could get Odell for cheap. I'm not going to have two receivers coming off blown knees.
I don't know how cheap Odell's going to be either. I mean, I understand he's coming off a torn ACL, but he was pretty darn good last year before he did. And I understand it's his second ACL, but I think there will be some suitors out there for Odell.
Yeah, and ultimately I kind of see him going back to the Rams.
Yeah,
I think it's just they're waiting to see let him heal up.
Well, that could be part of why they got rid of Robert Woods to begin with.
Yeah, so I think ultimately he ends up back in L.A. with them, but I wouldn't do that. I would go the cheap route. If you're going to sign a receiver that's a free agent, I would go the cheap route and go with Cole Beasley. Because you need a slot receiver.
Yeah.
Like you don't need one of these two-way guys. Like you need a true slot receiver.
Coming up next, we'll look ahead at tonight's game between the Preds and the Avalanche coming up in Game 2, including a specific area of the Predators that has me very concerned heading into this game. We'll get to that coming up on the other side. Attention, men, have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Well, Hillside Medical Clinic has a breakthrough treatment for ED that does not require any pills, injections, or surgery. And right now, Andrew joins me from Hillside Medical Clinic to tell us all about it. Andrew, what's going on?
Hey there, guys. This is sure helping a lot of couples if you're suffering from erectile dysfunction. We had a spouse tell us the other day that she went into the clinic with her husband feeling like roommates. They went through the treatments. Now they feel like lovers again. So this is the type of thing that acoustic wave therapy is accomplishing. Pressure waves open up the blood vessels, get men off of the pill, and get the blood flowing properly.
So, Andrew, what kinds of studies have been done on this wave therapy technology?
Well, it's pretty extensive. We're approaching 60 third-party studies. I believe it's irrefutable. You've got Cambridge, multiple universities, colleges, and hospitals. They have said safe and effective. It was called the new standard of care for erectile dysfunction.
And Andrew, you've got a special offer if our listeners call in right now.
That's right. Call us. We'll set you up with the exam, the assessment, the blood flow ultrasound. And this is pretty cool to today only, 20% off treatments. Give us a call now. That is all included.
You heard it, guys. Put a stop to your erectile dysfunction by treating the root cause of the problem. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now to qualify for that offer at 615-576-5000. That's 615-576-5000. Put a stop to your ED and regain your love life. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now at 615-576-5000. ESPN 102.5, the game is Nashville's official home of NASCAR. Tune in this Sunday at 1:30 for the Goodyear 400 at Darlington Raceway. Also get set for the race with Chasing Checkers with Chase McCabe.
Great
every
show.
Sunday at 8 a.m. on 102.5, the game. NASCAR on 102.5, the game, presented by Nashville Super Speedway and Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, the game. Robbie Stanley, Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Looking ahead to Game 2 tonight between the Predators and the Colorado Avalanche. Puck drop 8:30, pregame 7:30 here on ESPN 102.5 the game. And Chase, obviously this is one where it's important for the Predators to respond after just a brutal first period the other night against Colorado where you found yourself down 5-0. And look, let's be honest here. The game, for all intents and purposes, was over after the first period the other night. One part of the equation that you know, everybody's focusing on the goaltender part of this. Everybody's focusing on the second line and the lack of scoring there with the herd line, all these different things. And I understand all that, and all those are valid concerns. But the one thing that I keep going back to, and this is the case in the last couple of weeks of the regular season, even when Saros was in net, what in the world's happened to the Predators' defense out there? And, you know, you're looking around the other night. Some of it's the penalty kill. But you got, you know, Ekholm, I thought, making some mistakes the other night that you just don't typically see him make. You know, I think it's fair to say that especially lately, Carrier has been up and down. Mm-hmm. I think Fabro's been up and down. You know, Yossi's gotten caught a few times pinching, which you don't normally see that happening. And then, obviously, when you're on the road in the playoffs, your third pair can get exposed at time. And they got caught out there a couple of times against the MacKinnon line the last game, and that's probably not going to go well most of the time. But you look at the last couple of weeks of the season, and again, some of this is with UC Saros in net. 8 goals against St. Louis, 6 against Tampa, 5 against Minnesota, 5 against Calgary, 4 against Colorado, 5 against Arizona. Like, before you start to worry about everything else, probably the chief message that I have, if you're John Hines, defend. Y'all got to defend better, and it's been bad the last couple of weeks on defense for the Predators.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, the thing that I noticed the most, because you mentioned Yossi and Yossi making some mistakes. I think what happens with him, and this is a good trait and a bad trait all at the same time. What happens is when the rest of the defense, in this case, you know, isn't living up to expectations and they're not performing, that Yossi then has to go into, well, I got to put the team on my back mode. And he tries to do too much. And when he tries to do too much, that's when he makes mistakes. I think we all agree he's one of the best defensemen in the league. Could potentially win his second Norris Trophy. And, you know, is making a case for even bigger consideration later on. But he still needs some help. LeBron James needs some help. Jordan needed help. You know, everybody needs, you know, those complementary pieces. And, you know, the other night, Ekholm made some pretty big mistakes that led to some goals. You know, Carrier looked completely lost at times and looked like a rookie. And Fabro, as I said earlier, I think Fabro is what Fabro is. I don't think he's bad, but I don't think he's elite by any means.
Oh, yeah.
And I think nobody's asking him to be that. But you got to have a defense that's going to be complementary of each other, and they're not doing that right now. And that is a big concern. And that can go back to, is it the system, or, you know, because those playing in front of the defense are worn down because they play a defensive style of hockey? You know, the fact that you have the herd that's kind of beat down, you know, does that have a snowball effect on the defense? I think it does. I think that the forwards at times this year covered up for some deficiencies with the defense, and now they're just not doing that. So that is certainly a concern, because you're going to have to play defense to shut down these skilled, you know, players that Colorado has, because you're not going to outskill them at the end of the day. So that's a major concern for me going into game two. Now, I also go back to what I said earlier. I think you are going to see somewhat of a bounce back, because it can't be as bad as it was the other night.
You wouldn't think. If it is, that's a big problem. And you bring up a good point. Like, I think when you start talking about defense, obviously the first thing you think of is defensemen. You think of goaltending, but the forwards are part of this too. Like, they've got to get back, and, you know, when defensemen do pinch, it's your job as a forward to go cover up for those guys. And I just feel like too many times lately there have been some miscommunications on that front, and that's all it takes against a team like Colorado, and they're going to make you pay. So, you know, I thought Jared brought up a good point yesterday in terms of the Jared versus Joe discussion, which is when it's happening with one goalie, maybe it's easy to say at that point, okay, well, the goaltending's got to be better. And don't get me wrong, there are some shots that David Rittich has let in where I'm just like, oh, boy, that's not good. But, I mean, Saros got lit up against St. Louis a couple weeks ago. You know, Rittich got lit up when he came in relief against Calgary. You know, Ingram got lit up in the Arizona game as they closed out that game. It can't all be on the goaltending. Like, there's got to be some accountability there for the defensemen and for just the team defense as a whole. There's got to be, I think, a very specific commitment level to that tonight, because, you know, Colorado's good enough where you can play really well defensively and they're still going to generate their chances. but you can't help them. And I thought the Predators, I talked about this earlier, I think they helped them way too much in game one.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to build off something, too, that with the forwards, that, you know, playing a defensive style of hockey that we both were talking about. One reason that Elie Tolvanen was in the lineup for a long time was, even though you didn't want him to necessarily be known for this, you wanted him to score goals, he was playing a defensive style. I mean, he was getting in there and getting in the muddy areas and making plays. That kind of went away. And you can ask the question, like we are with the Herd, okay, is it because he's gassed and, you know, beat down because of the long season, and so maybe that's why giving him a break isn't a bad thing, that you could put him back in the lineup and get a little bit more of that? I mean, because if he's not going to score for you, at least go out there and bring some of that edge that he had earlier in the year. Because, like we're talking about, I do think there is a trickle-down effect. If you have the forwards that are playing that type of hockey that are backing up the defense, then the defense is going to play stronger, and then therefore it's going to take pressure off the goaltender. And you got to take pressure off the goaltender right now, whether it's Riddick or Connor Ingram, because you don't have Saros that can steal you a game. You know, I don't think you're not going to expect a rookie goaltender in Connor Ingram to steal you a game in the playoffs, because he's just trying to keep his head above water at this point. David Riddick, I don't believe, is capable of stealing you a game in the playoffs. So you're going to have to play as more of a cohesive unit if you want to try and get by until maybe you can get Saros back later in the round.
Well, and this is such a simple theory that I think sometimes people lose sight of it. But I do buy into it. Like, if you defend well, it's going to lead to more offense. Like, it's pretty simple. Yeah. If you defend better, Colorado's going to have the puck less. So you're going to have more chances offensively. I mean, you tell me. I know Duchesne scored twice the other night, one of them on the power play, and one of them he got behind the D, and there was a great stretch pass from Granlund. But how much sustained offensive zone time did the Predators have the other night? How threatening were they?
Not a lot.
Not very at all. So, you know, defending may not sound like it has anything to do with that, but the better you defend, the more you're going to have the puck, and the more threatening you can be offensively, and that's got to be a point of emphasis for the Preds as they look ahead to Game 2 coming up tonight. Speaking of Game 2, it is time for Preds Pick to Click here on Robbie and Rex Road. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, for your opportunity to guess the goal scorer for the Predators tonight in Game 2. If you get it right, you want a pair of tickets before you can buy them to see Michael Bublé coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 16th, and be qualified to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card as well. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is that time of the day, time for Preds Pick to Click here on Robbie and Rex Road. The Nashville Predators in action in Game 2 tonight between the Preds and the Colorado Avalanche. Puck drop at 8:30, pregame at 7:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And
we'll have a little tickets. Preds extra, too.
Oh, a little Preds
extra
starting
at 6 with Mr. Max Herves.
Oh, boy. Max Herves bringing the noise tonight on Preds Extra starting at 6 o'clock. The standings in Preds Pick to Click are as such. There's a lot of pressure on Chase McCabe today. The listeners and Joe Rexroad are tied at 19 correct answers apiece, which means Chase is picking for Joe today. Robbie with 17. Michelle with a late season surge. Now just two behind me with 15 correct answers. So the competition is fierce heading down into the playoffs. And with that in mind, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in today's participant, Jonathan in Hendersonville. Jonathan, thanks for calling in. Who is your pick to click tonight for the Nashville Predators?
You got to go with Duchesne.
Going with Matt Duchesne. Jonathan, we appreciate you calling in.
All right, thank you.
So Matt Duchesne scores twice the other night. So Jonathan rolling with a hot hand. By the way, crowd favorite up there in Colorado, Matt Duchesne,
time.
Every time he touches the puck. So Duchesne off the board. I'm up first today in the competition.
See, I think the caller fell into the trap a little bit, so it kind of made it set it up nicely for us.
Normally, obviously, with 240 goal scorers, the first two picks this year have been pretty automatic. Some combination of Forsberg and Duchesne. Forsberg, he just kind of looked invisible out there in the last game. Having said that, I'm going Philip Forsberg with my selection. Duchesne and Forsberg are
he
off
sucks.
The board.
Give it to me.
Chase, you are picking for Rexrode. Duchesne and Forsberg off the board. Your pick to click tonight for the Nashville Predators.
This is – okay, so one, if I'm picking for Rexrode, do I just want to screw with him and just go Borowiecki?
I just say you do whatever you want.
Yeah, no. Actually, this strategy has yeah, he'll complain no matter what. So this strategy has worked out for me because my initial thought is now right here in front of me. I am going with the man with the slow hand, Ryan Johansson.
I like it.
We're vibing.
Ryan Johansson.
Hey, Rob.
Hello. We vibing? How's it going? Duchesne, Forsberg, and Johansson off the board. Michelle Konezvik, your selection in Preds pick to click.
Chase, do you see me giving you the eyes? You stole my
pick. Are you
pen.
Giving me the double bird?
No, I think Draymond I'd get fired.
Going into vacation on style?
I think I'd get fired. I'm not going to give my boss a double bird.
I wouldn't fire you for that.
Oh, cool.
I'd fire you for much less.
Oh. Well, I gave a vibin' hint earlier I was going to pick Ryan Johansson, but a close second, the captain, Mr. Roman Josi.
Roman Josi.
The best hair in the NHL.
Duchesne, Forsberg, Johansson, and Josi, the selections today in Preds pick to click, and we'll see if someone besides Matt Duchesne can get on the board tonight. No disrespect to you, Jonathan. Maybe Duchesne will get on the board too. But it was Matt Duchesne, the lone goal scorer for the Predators in the first game against Colorado. Need to see more out of those guys 5-on-5. I thought the power play, I know they scored a power play goal. But really, other than that kind of broken play sequence there, power play didn't look very good the other night for the Predators. Obviously, that's going to have to be a factor as they move forward, but you need more from Johansson and Forsberg and Duchesne 5-on-5. They got to be much bigger factor tonight.
I completely agree with that, but where I'll take it a step further. This is a game where I think you really need like Janot or Trenin or even Sissons to put the puck in the back of the net for you. I mean, Trenin was trending towards potentially being a 20 goal scorer, and just they dried up for him and he got stuck on 17. I think it's been late March.
Yeah,
since he scored, and that was the two-goal game that he had. I think that this is the prime spot for Tanner Janot or Yakov Trenin to add to the scoring column. But I 100% agree that you got to get more chances if you're that top line. I mean, you just have to. I mean, this is where Forsberg has to go earn his money. Because you need him to show up in a game like this. And that has been historically – you know, an issue at times with where you have a big time star for the Predators that doesn't show up when it counts. And so that's what needs to happen. And he has in the past, you know, Josi has in the past. Duchesne obviously scored twice the other night in the loss. So that's a good thing. But I think this could be, if they're going to win, this is the type of game where you're going to have one of those guys that is in the bottom six or middle six that is going to do something for you. And then also you're going it. And a lot of that is going to be because you're getting such an effort and such pressure from the top line.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Rob from Clarksville texting in says, it just feels like a miserable summer ahead for the Preds. Lost Saros, choked to Arizona, looked terrible against the Avs. Praying to God we get Filthy Phil back, but man, it doesn't look great. You know, it is interesting, and I was thinking about this the other night. You know, as the game's going on and Forsberg's out there, I thought back to the conversation that Darren Donica Chase, you guys had with Poyle a few weeks ago in terms of the conversations kind of being put on halt come playoff time. You know, I said this yesterday. I've kind of long since thought that the contract would have been figured out by now, and the fact that it's not, to me, is pretty concerning. Obviously, that's not top of mind right now if you're the Predators and you're worried about the playoff series against Colorado, but I don't think you can help if you're a Predators fan but to somewhat have that in the back of your mind until it's either done or resolved in some way or the other.
Yeah, and if you're Philip, just from the human aspect of it, you know, even though you're locked in and you're focused on the playoffs, it's lingering. Like, it's still in the back of your mind that you can't say that it's 100% worry-free. I mean, you know, who's to say that he's not you know, sitting there thinking about the game and it trickles into his mind, you know, who knows, he could be having a dream about it. Like, I mean, there's, it's just, it's going to be there. It's going to linger until it's done, and they're not going to get it done until now after the playoffs, if they get it done at all. So, and I think it's affected him. I do. I think down the stretch, it certainly had an effect on how he played. Now he got to 42 goals 42, or whatever, yep, it was, you know, but let's be honest here. The way he was playing at times,
I thought he might get 50.
He should have passed Duchesne. Like, nothing against Duchesne. Duchesne should not have been the leading goal scorer on this team. It should have been Forsberg. But I think there were just a lot of different factors that went into that, and therefore he didn't get there. So I wonder, you know, if how much of an effect that's going to have in this series. But like we said, we could sit here tomorrow. I'll be in here with you tomorrow. We could sit here tomorrow and talk about the Preds come back in game two, they win, that you had Forsberg in that top line playing like they should, that, you know, the Herd looked good again, the defense played well, and Connor Ingram gets his first career playoff win, because I think we both believe Ingram's in net.
Dustin in Hopkinsville texting in says, one thing they need to do is target their superstars and hit them. Not illegally, just continually hit McKinnon, get in the goalie's crease, do all the things and play defense in front of our net. I think if you do those things successfully, you'll ultimately slow the game down and get momentum on offense. This coming from Dustin from Hopkinsville. So that's going back to the point of, you know, playing more your style of game, which the Predators never got to in game one.
I think to Dustin's point, you want to make guys like Landeskog and McKinnon uncomfortable, Rantanen, you know, make them uncomfortable, not try to hurt them, but just make them uncomfortable, make them have to play a game that they don't want to play.
Yep.
That's where the Predators can have the advantage. And I think they probably had that as the game plan the other night. They just couldn't execute it because they were in the box.
Taylor Lewan has just tweeted in all capital letters to the Preds official account, Nashville Hockey Town, good luck tonight, boys, with a picture of him with a catfish. So the Hockey Town tweet, again, making up for his mistake the other night of tweeting that while the Predators were losing 2-0 to the Colorado Avalanche, and he thought they were up 2-0. Good for Taylor Lewan.
I have just tweeted.
Amending his mistake.
I have just tweeted back at Taylor Lewan saying, quote, I love you.
You win some, you lose some.
That's right. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators all show long. We'll have Hal Gill coming up at 9:30, give his thoughts in advance
Skillsy
of game two. Looking forward to that one coming up later in the show. I've got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets before you can buy them to see Michael Bublé coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 16th, and be qualified to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card as well. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 for your chance to win those tickets and to qualify for the $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. The tickets go on sale for the Bublé concert, by the way, tomorrow at 10 a.m. And your next chance to win is tomorrow with Darren, Donick, and Chase. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.